This is VOA News. I'm Jim Bertel. It's been a deadly weekend in the United States. Two mass shootings have left more than two dozen dead and many others injured. We begin in El Paso, Texas, where police are investigating a mass shooting at a Walmart. At least 20 people are dead and 26 are wounded. Texas Governor Greg Abbott.
We have to be very, very clear that conduct like this, thoughts like this, actions like this, crimes like this are not who or what Texas is and will not be accepted here.
Mexican President Andre Manuel Lopez Obrador said three Mexicans were among those killed in the shooting. Just hours later, a gunman in the Midwestern U.S. state of Ohio killed nine people and wounded dozens of others. Dayton Mayor Nan Whaley says officers managed to reach the scene less than a minute after the gunman began shooting.
The shooter was able to kill nine people and injure 26 in less than a minute. And if we did not have police in the Oregon District and the thousands of people in the Oregon District enjoying their Saturday evening, what we could have had in the city.
Gary Pullen witnessed the shooting.
It was complete chaos. I heard bullets riddling. I believe it might have been the shooter who knew his life was coming to an end, and he shot all he could.
Authorities say the shooter's 22-year-old sister is one of the nine victims killed. Sudan's Transitional Military Council and coalition of protest leaders initialed a power-sharing agreement Sunday. The two factions will formally sign a constitutional declaration on August 17th. Be sure to take us on the go with the VOA mobile app. From Washington, this is VOA News. Demonstrators have continued to clash with police in Hong Kong as the two-month-old protest movement showed no signs of easing. AP's Sarah Bassett reports.
Clad in yellow helmets and black face masks, protesters squeezed out of a subway station in Causeway Bay, with a few people directing traffic and others holding open the turnstiles. Surveillance cameras at the station were covered in black tape and umbrellas as protesters spilled out. Makeshift barricades were also erected in the area, which hosts high-end department stores and upscale restaurants. Police say they will spray a coloured liquid on demonstrators to distinguish them from other members of the public. Activists have called for a citywide general strike on Monday. Protesters believe China's government and Hong Kong chief executive Carrie Lam are eroding the civil liberties promised when the former British colony was returned to China in 1997. I'm Sarah Bassett.
The lights are back on in Jakarta after a huge power outage hit the Indonesian capital and surrounding cities. The failure began at about midday local time and lasted about 8 hours. State power giant PLN has apologized, blaming a fault at a major power plant. The U.S. is welcoming a ceasefire declared in Idlib province in northwest Syria, the last insurgent stronghold in the country. Since April, hundreds of civilians have been killed in the violence in northwest Syria, and thousands more have fled. In the Philippines, three ferry boats capsized in rough seas, killing at least 25 people. Six others are missing. 55 other passengers and crew were rescued. A French inventor has succeeded in flying across the English Channel on a jet-powered hoverboard. Frankie Zapata designed the device, which took him across the channel from France to England in about 20 minutes.
And I knew after 50% of the flight, I saw that I still have like 70% of fuel. So I said, okay, now it's just a question of minutes and I will arrive in England.
The board is powered by five small jet engines. Iranian state media says Iran has seized another foreign tanker in the Persian Gulf. It said the tanker was carrying 700,000 gallons of fuel, adding that seven sailors had been detained. Nguyen Chia, the chief ideologue of the communist Khmer Rouge that destroyed a generation of Cambodians, died Sunday. He was 93. Nguyen Chia was known as Brother Number Two, the right-hand man of Pol Pot, the leader of the regime that ruled Cambodia from 1975 to 1979. The group's fanatical efforts to create a utopian society led to the death of some 1.7 million people. For news around the clock, whenever you need it, please go to voanews.com. I'm Jim Bertel, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
As a non-government organization working on human rights and human rights defenders and journalists in Tanzania, our role is to always campaign for justice and also use court of law to seek justice.
A Tanzanian human rights group plans to petition a high court to demand bail for investigative journalist Eric Kabandera Monday. Activists planned demonstrations Monday to demand a better Nigeria despite the arrest of one of its leaders.
I believe those who are still holding their guns and firing arms, they are missing the point. Even though they may have genuine complaints, this is not the way of making those complaints heard or listened to.
And the Mozambican main opposition party, RENAMO, plans to sign a peace agreement with the government this week. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. National coordinator for the Tanzanian Human Rights Defenders Coalition says his organization plans to petition the High Court Monday. The group is seeking an order to the police to present Eric Kabandera, a detained investigative journalist, in court. Onesmo Olengarumwa says the police have violated the Tanzanian constitution by continuously detaining the journalist for over 24 hours, as the law stipulates. Kabandera was arrested last Monday. To learn more about the plan to file a petition in court Monday, I reach Onesmo Olengarumwa, the national coordinator for the Tanzanian Human Rights Defenders Coalition.
According to our laws and even some of the international standards, when you have an accused person as a police officer, you should not have him for more than 24 hours. Now, it is about 6 days since Eriki is under police custody. It's quite a contrary to our constitution and even the law of the country. Therefore, what we are going to do is to have an habeas corpus. This is one of the legal applications before the High Court of Tanzania that requires an application and, of course, hearing of the court. But our prayers is that the court should order the police and those who are responsible to produce Eric before the court, if at all there's a case he has to answer. We also have a case that was filed last week. That is a case that requires, again, the court to order the police to ensure that Eric is granted bail while his case is under detention. I think those are the two cases we're going to have in court tomorrow.
I understand that Eric's lawyer says that the police plan to charge Eric Kabandera with sedition over an article in The Economist which said that the president is bulldozing Tanzania's freedom. But let me ask you this. Does that mean that his continued detention is a violation of the Tanzanian constitution?
First of all, publishing information as a journalist, but the reality now is that we are not sure of exactly an offense that he has accused before. Because as of now, we don't have formal charges that have been already, of course, filed before the court of law, showing that Eric is charged for this kind of offense. So as of now, we are still speculating. We cannot say that Eric is accused, because the first issue was issues of nationality, and then they came for issues of publication of wrong information, and then now talking of seditious and whatever. And probably there's also another way, probably as by tomorrow, maybe they may come up with something else. So let's wait for that. That's why we want to go to court and then ask for the court to order the police to bring him before the court.
Some people have even questioned the independence of judiciary. How pragmatic is your court case seeking for him to be produced in court and for the court to grant him bail? How pragmatic is this?
Yeah, of course, our laws are very open. That bail can police can also do, can order, can produce police bail, and court can also produce court bail. But as of now, we don't have police bail for Eric, and that of course, and the court can also not do so because Eric has not been yet officially charged in court. So it's a bit confusion. And the bail is one constitutional right because those currently speculated offences are bailable. Yeah. Maybe if they come up with something else which is non-bailable, like money laundering or treason and other things that are according to our laws and the constitution, of course, they are not bailable. But as of now, those speculated kinds of offences that are now being believed that it's what Eric is being charged for, of course, are bailable. And police can grant police bail. At the same time, it's in court. Courts also can grant bail.
After Monday's court action, what is the next line of action for the Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Coalition regarding the case involving Eric Kabendera?
Yes, we will continue because our role as a non-government organization working on human rights and human rights defenders and journalists in Tanzania, our role is to always campaign for justice and also use court of law to seek justice and also keep on convicting the government and the authorities actually to do justice for Eric. Yes, we are not the government, so the government, they know how to deal with issues. So we don't want to tell the government, and we are not telling even the government maybe to free him. No, if they feel like Eric has committed some offenses or being criminal or whatever, please let them follow the due process of the law. Let him be granted all the rights as an accused person, as provided by the Constitution of Tanzania and the other laws of the country that guide the whole processes of arrest, prosecution of people who are being accused of committing an offense in the country.
Onesmo Lengurumwa is the national coordinator for the Tanzanian Human Rights Defenders Coalition. He spoke with me from the commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. A Nigerian defense lawyer says protests to demand a better Nigeria will proceed as originally planned beginning Monday. This despite the arrest of Omowole Sowore, the presidential candidate for the opposition party, the African Action Congress, in the last general election. Enibihe Efiong says the security agency detaining the opposition leader has refused to explain why they are holding him despite repeated attempts by a delegation from the party seeking answers. To learn more about the opposition leader's arrest and the Monday protest, I reach defense lawyer Enibihe Efiong.
Well, so far there has been no formal reaction from the government or the security agencies, but every information at disposal indicates that the arrest and detention is in connection with the mass action protest that is being planned for Monday. They will not be able to get access, direct access to using the arrest. Some minutes ago, we were at the security service office in Lagos, where we were speaking to. We were denied, our people who went there were denied access to him. So apparently, he is being held by the secret service and by the secret police, and they have declined to even come out and say, oh, this is why we are keeping him. But as I have said, every indication shows that the connection will be Monday morning.
When you went there, did they tell you when he will be released, or did they say what investigation they are undertaking, for which reason they picked him up?
We have sent a delegation to the office this morning when he was taken. They do not even allow our people access into their premises. It is that is the primitive way that they behave. They don't even allow civil conversation. And because they've not even been allowed, we have been denied access to your political representation, we have been denied access to his family and friends. We cannot really say what exactly they want to achieve. So our understanding is that they are holding him in connection with the rally that is being planned on Monday. Maybe they are holding that by keeping him in custody, they are able to frustrate any plan by Nigerians to come out on Monday to protest against the government. So for us, we will continue to press on for his release, we continue to fight for his release. For us, the issue that led to the decision to go on the rally is not personal to him. These are issues that affect the vast majority of the population. And we are not willing to compromise on those issues. This not mean the mass and escalating security in the country, the bad government, the corruption in the country, and so on. These are issues that Nigerians are seriously concerned about.
Are you therefore saying that Monday's rally that he called for will proceed as originally planned in spite of his detention?
It's going to go ahead. There is no way they can allow us into submission. We are not going to be intimidated by cowards who do feel that they can use their power, they can use the political power to support defense. This is our country. We don't have any other country. There is no way we are going to allow the government or the agents of the government to intimidate us or to stop us from exercising our fundamental rights under the Constitution. The rally is going to go ahead. The protest is going to go ahead. I want them to know that very clearly. There is no going back on this.
But some people are also saying that he might not have gotten permission to organize this rally on Monday, and perhaps some of his rhetoric could destabilize the country or plunge the country into instability. And that is why the security agencies would have to act in order to prevent any possible instability or disturbances at all. Your reaction?
I think that is a very similar line of thinking from the security agencies. Because to start with, we do not need their consent, we do not need their permission, we do not need to even inform them before we can go out to exercise our conditional rights. The right is not given to us by the government, and we don't need the consent of the government to exercise this right. So we know that in 2003, when the current president left election under the political party then known as the NPP, we know that Nigeria to protest, he was with that. He asked that his party should go to court. He went to court and he won. And the court of appeal decided that Nigeria did not need police only to go and run. This was arising from the decision that the current president was directly involved. So if he had gone to court and arising from the attack on him in 2019, and the Nigerian court validated the right of Nigeria to protest without police only, why should that man say that he's the current president? So we are not really bothered about what they are saying. We know these are. It's just the decision that they would do to discredit what we are doing. We would also recall that very recently, when the president was under the country for several months, the Nigerians were insisting that the either return or resume or resign. And they were also attacked. I was also the mayor to that group, known as the Amini Bondi group, that occupied Edo, complaining in Abuja, requesting that the president should resume. And the court agreed with me that, look, you cannot, on the basis of apprehension of violence, disrupt the right of people to protest. That is why we have the security agency. That is why we have the police.
Inebehe Efiong is the defense lawyer for Nigerian opposition presidential candidate Omowole Sowore. He spoke with me from the commercial capital, Lagos. Mozambican main opposition party RENAMO plans to officially sign a peace agreement with President Philip Nyusi's government this week. Eduardo Nombureti, a negotiating member of the opposition party, says the agreement would also lead to reconciliation and reintegration, which he said would help ensure peace and political stability. His remarks follow the recently signed cessation of hostilities agreement between the government and RENAMO, ending years of conflict between the two groups. To learn more about the agreement, I reach Eduardo Nombureti, the RENAMO head of Department of Training and Strategic Studies and one of the negotiators for the agreement.
Well, on Monday, on the August 1st, the government and RENAMO signed a cessation of hostilities agreement, which means that it's formally ending the hostilities between the two parties. And that was a formalization because cessation of hostilities has been declared by President Afonso Jakama for over a year now, but there was a need to formally sign the agreement that there will be no more hostilities in the country. And very soon, in the next few days, there will be a signing of a peace agreement and reconciliation. That is an agreement which will put the end not only to the fighting, but the starting also of the process of reconciliation, reintegration, which is what is needed for Mozambique at this time. That not only the cessation of hostilities or the end of the fighting, but there's the need of a comprehensive way forward so that Mozambique can really enjoy a long-lasting peace. So for us as Renamo, this is a big milestone, which indicates the commitment of both parties that the war has ended, and now we are opening a new page for Mozambique, for prosperity and for development of the country.
How significant are these agreements to be signed? And you talked about the commitment. Are you sure that both sides are committed to this? Because previous agreements have been wobbled by accusations and counter-accusations.
Well, I believe in both leaders, and I think that if they were willing to make such public commitment, they are not doing it just for fun. They are taking it seriously. They are committing their names. They are committing their organizations. And with regards to the past, I think we learned from the mistakes that were made in the past. And it is from those mistakes that we are building now a new process that should be on a solid foundation, learning from what was done wrong in the past. So I'm quite certain that this time around, the process will really bear fruit, because it's not only the parties that are engaged in this dialogue. The international community is firmly engaged in this dialogue, and the Mozambicans also are watching closely the developments around the peace negotiation, so that once for all we can have an agreement that puts the weapons aside, and any complaint, any issue that arises will be dealt with through the dialogue, through a communication between the two parties.
How beneficial will these agreements and what you said is the anticipated commitment from both sides be for the people of Mozambique?
Well, the suspension of hostilities, it was well received throughout the country and beyond, because definitely a cessation of hostilities, a peace agreement, means a lot for Mozambicans. Without the war, the country has a potential of developing very fast, and it has been stagnant all the time, all this time because of the war. There was no possibility of any development. There was no freedom of circulation for, you know, commodities, people. And so it was really difficult for the business to flow. So it is very significant for the Mozambican. It is very significant for the neighboring countries. It is very significant also for the continent, because Mozambique will be then a mirror for the rest of the countries that are still struggling with the conflict. They will see from what we have learned. They will see from what we have gained from signing such agreements, that they will also follow the same path that Mozambique is following to resolve any disputes, any conflict.
Meanwhile, President Nyusi has warned armed groups that they will be hunted down if they don't lay down their weapons following this agreement signed between yourself and the government. What is Renamo's position on that?
Well, at this time when both sides are signing a peace agreement, it was not expected that any other group or any other individuals will come and still fire, you know, arms in a period where cessation of hostilities has been declared. I believe those who are still holding their guns and firing arms, they are missing the point. Even though they may have genuine complaints, this is not the way of making those complaints heard or listened to. There are other ways how they can raise their complaints without going to the bush. Because definitely, if they continue holding guns and firing in the bush, they will be against the law.
Eduardo Namburetti is the Renamo head of Department of Training and Strategic Studies. He spoke with me from the Mozambican capital, Maputo. More than 100 migrants from Togo, Burkina Faso, Nigeria, and Benin are stranded in Cameroon after they were rescued by the Central African country's military from their capsizing vessel in the Atlantic Ocean. The migrants, who are calling on their governments for help, say they do not have money or food. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from the Eboje in southern Cameroon.
117 men, women and children lie on the bare floor at the government school in Ebodje, a Cameroon village on the west coast of Africa near the Atlantic Ocean. Christian Jongo, village chief of Ebodje, says officials have been looking after the unexpected visitors for 5 days.
On les a recueillis comme des poissons parce que lorsque la barque a eu ce choc.
He says on July 29, his community joined the Cameroon military to save the lives of the migrants from the sea. He says immediately after removing them from their vessel that was almost capsizing, the community gave them clothing, coffee, and food. He says townspeople are now hoping for assistance from the government because they no longer have food for the stranded migrants. They say the vessel, nicknamed Ave Maria, left Ghana for Gabon and Equatorial Guinea and had on board 65 people from Burkina Faso, 41 from Togo, a man from Nigeria, 3 people from Benin, and 7 crew members from Ghana. There were 43 women and 24 children. The vessel ran out of fuel at sea in Cameroon territorial waters and was rescued after several hours by the Rapid Intervention Battalion of Cameroon's military and fishermen. Witnesses said some migrants dove into the sea in an attempt to swim to safety and were rescued by local fishermen. No deaths were reported, but since the ordeal, the vessel's crew is requesting additional payment from passengers to refuel the boat, and most of the migrants say they can't pay. 27-year-old Burkinabe migrant Ali Rashid says he was struggling to find his way to Spain through Equatorial Guinea.
Pour facilement arriver en Espagne, il faut passer par la Guinée équatoriale parce que la Guinée équatoriale parle.
He says it is easier to travel to Spain through Equatorial Guinea because the Central African state enjoys good diplomatic relations with its former colonial master, and the two countries have Spanish as their official language. He says from Spain, he has dreams of traveling to any other European country. 32-year-old Benin migrant Raul Amadi says he left Ghana for Gabon, where he was told by a relative who had been there for 5 months that he could get a job as an electrician. He says after observing the difficult conditions they went through at sea, he now wants to return home.
On veut plus pour rentrer dans ces bateaux-là, on veut rentrer chez nous. On voulait rentrer chez nous immédiatement.
Amadi says he no longer wants to continue with the vessel and is pleading with his government to help him and his peers to return home. Leonie Leguda, a resident of Ebodje, says since the migrants arrived in her village, life has become more difficult.
Their presence here is a nuisance to the whole community. They are harvesting our crops and stealing our fowls and goats. They should leave now.
Most of the migrants had no travel documents, but were identified through national identity cards. Some of the travelers want to return to their countries of origin, while others want to go to Ghana. Cameroon's military says it has opened an investigation. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Ebodje, Southern Cameroon.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Malaria is transmitted by mosquito bites, but there are some things you can do to reduce your risk. Wear light-colored, loose-fitting clothing, including long pants and long sleeves, especially when it is dark and mosquitoes are most active. Eliminate any standing water around your home, including water that collects in wood piles, taps, puddles, old buckets, water jugs, and containers that livestock drink from. And if you can get one, use an insecticide-treated bed net to cover you and your children while you sleep.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
We'll be right back.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Mpuga and music from our African collection. And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. But first, Zimbabwe's newly constituted anti-corruption commission has begun to make arrests to deal with the issue of endemic corruption. It's blamed for the economic challenges the southern African country has been experiencing over the past decade. For VOA, Adi Gondo has the report from Bulawayo.
The Zimbabwe Anti-Corruption Commission recently arrested the Minister of Tourism, Prisca Mfumira, upon her return from an overseas trip on charges of corruption. Charges against her include criminal abuse of public office involving US$95 million. A few days ago, Douglas Tapfuma, the former principal director of state residences, was arrested by the Zimbabwe Anti-Corruption Commission late Tuesday afternoon, also on corruption charges. Whilst applauding the drive, legal expert and other political commentators are expressing reservations. Doug Coltart, a human rights lawyer, speaks on the developments.
From the information that I've seen, it appears that both Mupumira and Tapfuma were involved in corrupt activities, and so their prosecution is welcome. However, it does appear that what we are really seeing is a political factional fight being pushed within ZANU-PF rather than a real drive against corruption per se. Even in the drive against corruption, rights do need to be respected.
The state invoked Section 32 of the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act, which allows it to seek the further detention of an accused person for up to 21 days to conduct further investigations. Coltart and legal watchdog Veritas maintain that the section violates the constitutionally guaranteed right to bail.
The unconstitutional detention of Mpumira using an extremely dodgy clause of the Criminal Procedure and Evidence Act, which really should have been expunged from our law a long time ago. It's not the type of, a clause which denies someone the opportunity even to apply for bail is just not one that one would ever expect to see in a modern society.
Coltart expressed the hope that proper trials will be conducted and that the real bigwigs will stand trial. Some political analysts, however, see something sinister in the events leading up to the current events. Thomas Tole expresses his reservations.
ZANU-PF has mastered a way of diverting attention. It's the diversion politics at play. What betrays the whole, I would say, strategy behind use of ZAC in arresting the people who have been involved in corrupt deals is the fact that the list that has been given to ZAC was originated by ZANU-PF Youth League. And we know the history of how the main wing of the party has used the Youth League as a pawn in the broader political theater.
Observers note that the ZANU-PF Youth League published a list of corrupt ruling party heavyweights, including Mfumira, a few months ago, with the Women's League coming out in support of the youth. A few weeks later, a new team was appointed to man the Zimbabwe Anti-Corruption Commission, headed by former High Court Judge Lois Matanda Moyo, who also happens to be the wife of the Foreign Affairs Minister Sibusiso Moyo. Reverend Raymond C., a clergyman and civil society leader, speaks on the commission's work.
Nobody questions as to whether we should have a commission or not. But I think the question that people have is, do our commissions work as they are meant to, without government manipulation and government interference? I think that's the...
Observers say that the Zimbabwe Anti-Corruption Commission suffers from a perception problem given media reports of missing dockets from work by members of the previous commission who were relieved of their duties. Motsi believes that the issue of corruption is serious and deeply embedded.
And the missing document from the previous commission is corruption in itself. There is the problem of impunity. The second problem is this whole issue of lawlessness, which is premised on selective application of the law, leads to lawlessness. And we are in this state because of that. And thirdly, the entitlement. They think they are entitled to do the wrong thing, to do what they want without anybody asking them.
The latest suspect to be arrested by the Zimbabwe Anti-Corruption Commission, Douglas Tafuma, has also been accused of importing 82 vehicles without paying customs, excise and duty, as well as maintaining a chamber at State House where individuals who stood in the way of his corrupt deals were tortured. Observers say that the anti-corruption drive is welcome as long as the matters are handled impartially and follow fair and transparent procedures. Reporting for VOA in Bulawayo, this is Adi Gondo.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Mpuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. The Confederation of African Football is to meet soon to decide on the African Champions League final. This follows the Court of Arbitration for Sport overruling the decision to replay the African Champions League final. Tunisia's Esperance and Morocco's Wydad Casablanca lodged appeals after the CAF Executive Committee decided to replay the second leg. Both felt they should be awarded the win. Wydad had a goal disallowed and left the pitch because VAR was not working. Esperance were winning 2-1 on aggregate and declared champions initially. The home side were handed the trophy and winners' medals after a two-hour delay on June 1st, but were told to return them days later after CAF ordered a replay on neutral territory, citing unsafe conditions. Both clubs think they should be named champions and given the prize money. Wydad's request was rejected by the Court of Arbitration for Sport, with Esperance appeal to be investigated at a later date. After appeals by both clubs, Court of Arbitration for Sport ruled that CAF's executive committee did not have jurisdiction to order that the final be replayed. Still in football, the South African Football Association, SAFA, has appointed Molefi Nseki as interim coach of South Africa a day after Stuart Baxter resigned from the post. Baxter stepped down on Friday, saying it's the right time to move on with a new cycle of African Cup of Nations and World Cup qualifiers ahead. The 50-year-old Nseki, who has been the under-17 coach, has been involved with Bafana Bafanas for several years and was part of Baxter's technical team at the recent Nations Cup in Egypt. He's been involved with all the national teams over the past few years, from the under-20 men, as well as Banyana Banyana and under-17 women. Baxter's second spell in charge of Bafana Bafana comes to an end just weeks after South Africa reached the quarterfinals of the recent Nations Cup. Baxter is now the ninth coach to leave his job following the Africa Cup of Nations finals last month. He follows Clarence Seedorf of Cameroon, Javier Aguera of Egypt, Paul Put of Guinea, Harvey Reynolds of Morocco, Ricardo Manetti of Namibia, Emmanuel Amunike of Tanzania, Sebastian Desbury, Uganda, and Sande Kizambwa of Zimbabwe, in either quitting, coming to the end of their contract, or being fired. In athletics, Caster Semenya will not defend her World Championships 800 meters title in September after a setback in her challenge to the restricting of testosterone levels in female runners. But the South African is quoted as saying she would continue her fight for human rights despite her disappointment. Semenya has twice appealed against IAAF rules preventing her from running without medication, but a ruling allowed her to compete has now been overturned. Semenya is challenging new rules from the sports world governing body that she and other athletes with differences of sexual development must either take testosterone-reducing medication in order to compete in track events from 400 meters to the mile or change to another distance. The 28-year-old Semenya has been able to race while awaiting the decision of a Swiss court, having previously lost an appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sports. The latest ruling by the Swiss Federal Supreme Court means she will not be allowed to compete at the World Championships in Doha. Finally, Kenya's Stephen Kiprop and Ethiopians Jamel Yime and Sembere Teferi are among the first 10 names announced for the Valencia Half Marathon on October 27th. Kiprop illustrated fine form in 2018, winning 3 half marathon races in the Netherlands and Czech Republic and finishing 5th in Valencia, But it was in 2019 that the 20-year-old leapt to stardom by winning at Ras Al Khaimah with a sizzling time of 58.42, the fastest in the world this year. 22-year-old Yime finished second in Valencia last year in 58.33, an Ethiopian national record that elevated him to equal third on the all-time list. Teferi, who is 24, the first major announcement for the women's race, has followed a similar trajectory. She too set her career best in Ras Al Khaimah earlier this year, clocking 1 hour 5 minutes and 45 seconds. Organizers are offering a nearly $80,000 world record bonus, as well as an additional $33,000 bonus if the men's winner breaks the 58-minute barrier or if the women's winner dips under the 1 hour 4 minutes and 30 seconds. Both the current world records have been set in Valencia. And that's it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent. You are hearing Davido and Chris Brown with Blow My Mind. Amber Lulu featuring T-Touch. Vunga come next. And then Eddie Kenzo featuring Pato Rankin with Royal. And then Rima answer with us with African Woman.
Get you all alone for one eye. You do me something, no lie. I go mad for your type.
Sina muda, sina haya. Mungu mwenye pita babaya.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. And now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Last week, RENAMO, the opposition party in Mozambique with a military component, signed a peace agreement with the government of Mozambique. Some will say, yet again, RENAMO blighted the history of Mozambique because after independence in 1975, RENAMO launched a revolution against the government. It was initially assisted by a group of wealthy Portuguese business people. Later, the group was taken over by the apartheid regime's intelligence agency. It was a formidable party against the government. It established a powerful base camp which was impenetrable in central Mozambique. The 16-year civil war in Mozambique caused the loss of many lives. Some say over a million were killed. However, owing to the hard work of a Catholic group in Rome, assisted by the United Nations in its last phase, a peace agreement was signed in Rome for a solution. That agreement provided for the setting up of United Nations peacekeeping force and the holding of elections. All these were done and it ran smoothly. When the elections were held, the government of the day won it, but RENAMO, under the leadership of Alfonso Daclama, did extremely well in central and northern Mozambique. However, the constitution of Mozambique did not allow for RENAMO to enjoy the effect of its political gains, and that made it difficult for RENAMO and its leader, Alfonso, to accept fully the government. But through mediation, it was possible to work out something on the ground. The trick was that Alfonso Daclama was able always to push the envelope. but not to go to the extent whereby the old agreement could collapse. Alfonso da Clama died last year, and there was a contest within Ingenamo for leadership. Now, a new leader has emerged, but he is being contested by another group which does not accept his leadership of Ingenamo. It is this leader that has now decided that the time is up to have a complete end of the war between Ingenamo and the government. There are also other factors involved for this speed. The Pope will be visiting Mozambique shortly, and he had expressed the view that he wants to come to a peaceful Mozambique. There is also the October election for the president and other legislative bodies. So it is hoped to have a peace agreement now will be conducive to both the visit of the Pope and the October elections. There are two points of view to this peace agreement. The more pessimistic view would say that this has been done before and it has not worked because the parties did not show good faith. Secondly, the others who say that the Ingenamo fighters are tired, that they want to go home to leave the bush, and that they are now ready to put down their arms, demobilize, and go home. These things could turn out to be, both could be true. But it will all depend on certain factors. One is the government, or whoever emerges as the winner in October, must show that they were willing to live in peace with Ingenamo. In the past, the governments were not sure whether they can trust Ingenamo because of his association for so long with the intelligence agency of apartheid South Africa. Secondly, because it has shown such strong support, political support, in central and northern Mozambique, where it has its military base, there was always fear that to give them some any military working relationship there, political, would lead to disintegration of Mozambique. But others believe that it is time now to have good faith. So it will depend, one, on the government. Secondly, it will depend on the international community to give the necessary assistance for demobilization, because only part of the fighters can join the army. The rest will have to go home, and they will have to given the necessities to live a worthy life. And also the African Union and the sub-regional groups must follow closely the implementation. If these things are done, then the long, dark days of Mozambique civil war will be over, and Africa could march on. I thank you.
And that was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Xiao Gang Chang, we say thanks for joining us. I remember, as the elders say, other people's wisdom prevents the king from being called a fool. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.